Unfiltered opinions.
Sometimes you have ideas and you're not quite sure why.
As you secure the bag.
Sometimes you meet people and realize there's probably a reason why you stayed in touch.
Just listen.
Sometimes all the pieces just come together by themselves.
I'm Jimmy Mayaha.
And I'm Simon Brown.
Welcome to Insider Exchange.
Good morning. Welcome to another episode of Insider Exchange. Welcome to Market Matters, live streamed every Monday for your viewing pleasure. Obviously, the rest of the episodes will be out later this week. Today on Market Matters, we get straight into it. We look at the, call them diplomatic relations between South Africa and the United States. We also take a look at South Africa and the United States' interest rates. Both countries are giving interest rate decisions this week. And we take a look at one of the most surprising corporate moves that we have seen in recent times. Perhaps we'll start with that. Si?
Recent times.
So I'm driving to studio this morning. And
for the record, I'm having some muesli. I know nothing until you arrive in studio and tell me about this, but carry on.
So we see the same announcement, though. I see the same Standard Bank announcement.
Quarter past seven this morning.
Right. The deputy CEO, Kenny Fihla, has resigned, is now
CEO
being placed
of Standard Bank South Africa, and yes, he is gone like immediate.
Immediate effect, as of last night.
Your parking bay is cancelled, your access card doesn't work.
Now, for context, for those in our community joining us, when a resignation like this typically happens, there might be a process of garden leave, there might be a process of a restraint of trade, there might be a bit of, you know, let's prepare some people about this decision. And from the perspective of the deputy CEO, or former deputy CEO of Standard Bank, the succession path is something we'll get into as well. But the process that's followed is such that someone would then kind of, you know, ease into things, right? That was the announcement probably around 7-ish, 8-ish this morning from the Standard Bank team. At the same time, there was a little subtle something dropped online. I think it was Bloomberg that dropped it first, that he would then be stepping into the role of CEO at APSA, a competitor. And I happened to be
head-on direct competitor.
I happened to be driving, so I didn't get this. But when I got to studio, you and I looked at this, and I just pulled up the SENS announcement, and it's there, effective 17 June.
3 months.
3 months from now, he assumes the role of APSA CEO, but not only APSA Group CEO, Chief Executive Officer and Executive Director. Executive Director of APSA Group and APSA Bank, effective 17 June 2025, subject to regulatory approval. Now, obviously, regulatory approvals, blah, 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 blah. We're not here about that. It's not the shocking part.
No.
3 months, garden leave, restraint of trade, key man things. What's happening?
To be clear, I mean, these are direct competitors. They have strategies. He walks in to APSA knowing exactly what their biggest competitor down the road is doing.
I spoke to the incoming CEO of APSA, Kenny, last week with Standard Bank results.
Yeah.
So this is as fresh as a daisy. And I have so many questions. And I think one of them is what you and I were trying to look at is if you have been put on the same
exact same path,
career trajectory as the current group CEO.
CIB, Standard Bank SA, CEO, Deputy CE.
So again, for context, Deputy Chief Executive of the Standard Bank Group is effectively you in waiting for when the CEO steps down to be then appointed.
Yes.
Why would you leave?
I absolutely gave him the keys to the vault. He said, help yourself.
What vault? Standard Bank is the largest by assets on the continent.
But you don't have the keys. APSA gives you the keys and says, whatever you can carry. No, that wouldn't help because you can't even carry that much. I mean, they must have, it makes no sense because, I mean, the man has more money than he can spend, although maybe he doesn't. Why is he leaving Standard Bank to APSA, which has had a small bit of a challenge keeping CEOs? There's certainly been some frictions.
So if we look at job security, you've been at Standard Bank for almost 18 years, I suppose, right?
You're going to earn R1 billion as CEO at Standard Bank over a decade or two.
Okay, let's look at the current CEO's structure. Now, all of this is publicly available information. We have not breached anybody's poppy. No secrets here, right? According to the latest annual financial reports from Standard Bank, the Standard Bank CEO, current group CEO, Sim Tshabalala, has about 635,000 odd Standard Bank ordinary shares at 230 rand a share. That equates to around 146 million odd rand worth of Standard Bank shares. Now, obviously, he would have accumulated that over a number of years.
And he's been selling. And he earned 80 odd million last year.
Right. But interestingly enough, between last year and this year, that number has moved from 521 odd thousand to 635 odd thousand. So has acquired more shares, whether it's by way of compensation or by way of actual purchasing of the shares. But either way, there was no mention in the annual reports of the shareholding that the former deputy chief executive would or had at the time of resignation. And that could be one side of it. But the bigger question is, what you raised, Sai, is you go into a bank that has a history of, what is it? I think it's five CEOs in 6 years, or is it six CEOs in seven
Something
years?
Like that.
I'll do the math for you in a second, and I'll come
what
back to you.
What about the Paul Oak who's sitting there?
Charles Russo. Charles Russo, the interim CEO.
It's like awkward.
No, that might be the wrong interim CEO. Give me a sec.
I thought that was the right one.
That is the interim CEO. I was right. Charles Russo. That is an interesting question, because I suppose you've then effectively made up your mind around who's going to be your group chief executive.
So he's out.
He's out.
That was
effective
an awkward
June
conversation.
And he stepped in around October of 2024 when Ari Rotenbach retired.
8 months, which comes back to Absa. I mean, whatever. Love them, hate them, or something like that. I mean, like they've had no long-term CEO since Mira Ramos, who left in, 2018?
Yes. Since then, it's just been interims and shuffling through CEOs
People leaving after 18 months, whatever the case is. Mm. In other words, there's been no long-term
stability.
Coherent plan.
Which also then begs the question, one of the most stable Standard Bank employees to move across, are you hoping that you bring the stability?
Well, patently, you are. I mean, look, they must have given him. So weirdly, we couldn't find him having any shares at Standard Bank or any options
that were
or
declared.
Anything.
So that would mean he might not be an executive director that would have to declare.
Yeah, he's not. He's not on the board.
Yeah. So only certain individuals would have to make that public knowledge, and that is directors and public interest.
Because what we found out was that when Jason Quinn left Absa for Nedbank, he gave up 60 million odd of deferred bonus shares at Absa, and Nedbank was like, no worry.
Here's a 60 million rand check, so you don't have to worry about that. Do you think that's the same situation that happened here?
They have to have, depending what he had. But that's so they've matched them one for one. Okay. But now you are, within a couple of years, almost certain to be CEO of Standard Bank, the group.
So the current CEO can't be there forever.
A bank that's doing quite well, a bank that has continuity.
Absolutely.
Sim has been there on his own for 8 years.
You've been in the same, just the logic.
Et cetera,
et cetera.
You're going to get the top job.
Yeah.
And you go to Absa and they keep you whole. But like Absa is an unknown to you. And if you look out, as a pure outsider, I look at Absa and I'm like, yo, that's a non-fun job to be trying to work out. So then maybe he was told he's not getting the Standard Bank job.
Oh, see that's an awkward conversation to have.
But then who does?
Yeah, but exactly, who does? Because in order for you to get that job, you have to have had experience in...
How old is he? The Standard Bank has a fairly, what's the word I'm looking for? Strict retirement policy.
Okay, retirement policy on
everyone.
Okay.
So let me see, I'm checking how
54
old.
As of last year. So would be turning 55 this year. So even if your Standard Bank retirement policy is at 65, you've got 10 years left in you.
63, but you've got almost 10. Sim's 57. Maybe Sim has said to him, I'm going nowhere. Maybe Sim has said, Sim's 57. Sim's been there having the job for himself for only 8 years. He'll be 10 years and 27. He shared it with Ben, but let's not count that. Ben Kruger. Or what did you call it for Afrikaans people?
Ben Kruger.
Kruger. That's Kruger International. Yeah. Yo, I know. It confuses the heck out of me. Anyway, so maybe Sim said, you know what, dude? I'm actually going to do myself a third term and I'm going to stay until 2032. Why not? Although, truthfully, I would want to spend time with my money at this point. In which case, in 7 years' time, that Oak's got no time left. Maybe it's like he got squeezed.
Do you think Absa just offered him a lot more money?
Can't be about money at this point. I mean, how much more? Sim's earning 60, 80, 100 million a year. What, they offer you 150. What are you doing with that extra 50?
Well, that and the shares, because we also don't know what share structure you've had. So if you're getting in on APSA shares...
I just, at this point, surely it can't be the money when you've got that much.
Okay, we will reach out to the powers that be, see if anyone will talk to us about this and see what happens. We're going to move on to the...
$10, no one's talking.
$10, no one's talking. We're going to move on to the other matters that we said we were going to discuss in Market Matters. The wonderful, we're calling them diplomatic relations between South Africa and the United States. The United States electing to evict... kick out our ambassador to the US the whole weekend. That's the only thing that was trending on X was South Africa should retaliate.
There was also a small match of a Grand Prix yesterday, but I mean...
Yeah, we skipped over that at some point.
I did not. I didn't wake up at 6, but carry on.
Yeah, but I mean that... and
it was the story
whole of
X.
South African X was just like, we can't take this lying down. And other parties were like, oh, this is what happens when you F around and find out. And
Trump doesn't like South Africa. Lots of reasons why. I still think that the G20 is one of them. Certainly Elon Musk doesn't help. Certainly the farmers telling them that bad things are happening doesn't help. Trump doesn't like us. So, I mean, the best one I saw, and I forget who wrote it, it was one of those long tweets, someone who pays a lot of money to have lots
to
of
write
characters.
Long tweets. Yes.
And he was saying, you know, Ibram Rasool's, whatever you think of him, he's not actually a fool. And he probably realized the writing was on the wall. He has spent 3 months trying to, or 2 months trying to navigate this. He's realized the writing's on the wall. And he not went rogue, but he, I mean, if you listen to what he said, he didn't say much. I mean, largely, he basically said this MAGA thing is crazy, is right wing, and is dangerous. And I appreciate that a lot of people don't agree with that. But the whole thing of diplomatic relations is that they're not always so diplomatic. That's the point of diplomatic relations. This is only the fourth time the US has kicked out an ambassador. And like others have been like...
In history?
In 66, since World War II.
Okay, but across all countries.
Yeah, I mean, so the others are like Bolivia.
Oh, we just missed top three.
Yeah, so like Bolivia, Iran, and some... I mean, it's like...
Iran, I can understand Iran.
We're in bad company here.
Yeah, okay, so... But this is the thing. Ibrahim Rasool, for those that need a bit of context, was previously an ambassador to the United States under, I'm trying to remember the administration, either the Mbeki administration, so seasoned international diplomat. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. When you're dealing with diplomatic relations, as Sai said, it's very much something that you're never going to always agree. You have to find each other in conversations. You have to, you know what I mean? And so for someone as seasoned as Ambassador Rasool to be called out of retirement, at the time he was called out of retirement, let's be clear, he wasn't unemployed. He was the chairman of the Development Bank of South Africa's board, right? And so he was called out of that by the president to come serve the national duties. Now, someone as seasoned as that wouldn't just let emotion get the better of them in some of their sentiments that they are saying.
No, he knows what he's doing.
He knows how to relay conversations, how to navigate conversations, how to have difficult conversations, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of the conversations that have happened now has been, oh, but do we have the right international relations minister in place? Who do we send next? Blah, blah, blah. And to your point, Sai, around the who do we send next, some of the conversations have been saying the United States won't accept anyone that we send next.
Quite possibly.
Simply won't.
Which again is from a diplomatic relations completely unheard of. But to be clear, wild stuff's happening over there. At State and Bank and in America.
But it's crazy everywhere.
And I said before, I mean, you know, when Trump doesn't like you, like he currently doesn't like Canada, I mean, we're in a weird group, right? It's like Mexico, Canada. Oh, he likes Russia. He doesn't like Ukraine.
Mexico, Canada, the whole of Europe and NATO, Ukraine and China, but we will ally. We like the one BRICS country, the one that's got the potential to go into a nuclear war with us.
And to be clear, when he doesn't like you, like it doesn't matter, actually. And, you know, is it right or wrong or fair that he doesn't like us? Doesn't matter. He gets to decide who he doesn't like, and he's not liking us. And, I mean, it's just, you know, Zelensky's coming here, and my when that news broke 2 weeks ago, he's coming in April. When that news broke, I'm like, no, dude, like, stop infighting. You want to fly under this radar. We are not flying under the radar.
And we stopped flying under the radar a while ago.
That's what I think Rasul realized, is that, like, we're not avoiding this, so let's go down in a bag of flames. So he was given 72 hours. And then weirdly, they gave him an extra couple of days. He's got to be out by Friday. But it's weird because, it's his family. It's everyone. Now, I don't know what his family is. I mean, he hasn't got young kids,
No, 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 no.
But
still, so here's the thing, right? From a diplomatic relations point of view, the presidency came out and said, we will engage on diplomatic along the relevant channels, et cetera, et cetera. Basically, we will follow the proper procedure and we won't act out the way the United States has, right? Mm-hmm. But at what point does that stop? If we are taking the narrative that the United States clearly doesn't like us and we're anticipating we're going to be removed from AGOA and we're anticipating that relations have broken down. Yes, they're going to take over the G20 presidency in November. Yes, Donald Trump has already expressed he has no desire to come here to fetch the G20 presidency.
Post it.
Exactly. So if this is already the situation and we've got tariffs imposed on us and we're already on the receiving end of the United States' wrath at this point, why then does the presidency say we still want to come to the table and sit down? Why then does the presidency still want to pander towards
because he's doing diplomatic relations diplomatically.
Is that how it's supposed to be done, diplomatically? Okay.
Which truthfully, I probably like Donald Trump can't spell.
Okay, so we're doing things diplomatically. What happens when diplomatically doesn't work out? Where do we go from there?
Isn't that how World War I started? They shot the oak because things were breaking. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, like, I'm not sure. I just don't know.
What does this mean for us locally?
Remember, directly it means not much. It means we don't have much influence in Washington. We can get influence the other way, the more effective way, which is by buying influences. What do they call them? They don't look at me like... people who go to Congress and talk to congressmen and say, please pass this bill or that bill. Come on, there's a word for it. They got things. They're called influences. They're not... Anyway, so we lack that. Truthfully, we didn't have much. It's important. We need to be in Washington and talking to the American government. Mm-hmm. But here's the next thing, right? We're about to rename Sandton Drive, as I say, we, after a female Palestinian person, because I'm not... Whatever you call her,
struggle,
once...
Struggle, stalwart, whatever, but non-South African individual, yes.
$10 says they close that embassy. Now, you can't visit America because where do you get a visa from?
Okay.
As I said, Trump doesn't like us.
That's fair. And that's something that could definitely creep up to other conversations that happened online, was South Africa and the trade side of it from that perspective, trading partners and all of that. And I saw an interesting tweet from Clayson Munyela. Mm. He said that the United States is no longer our largest
lobbyists.
Trading partner.
Lobbyists.
Okay. You said influencers, and I'm like, the TikTok kind?
Sorry, carry on.
So... Excuse me. Clayson says the United States is not our largest trading partner. China is first. The United States sits third. The EU bloc is second. Mm. So if we are shifting ties and we're dropping our third largest trading partner and we're leaning into this non-aligned stance of doing what's best for South Africa and blah, 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 then what's best for South Africa is to lean into the BRICS bloc, to lean into the Eurozone, to lean into Asian trade with China and Russia and everybody else, and to reestablish South Africa as the strong country on the African continent. Correct. Because at some point, we were the biggest, we had the biggest airline, biggest economy, all of that stuff. So if that's what we're doing, if that's the non-aligned approach that we are going to take, then government of South Africa, let's be brave about it. Let's stand our ground and reestablish what non-aligned means then.
Because everyone's like, oh, don't worry, Trump's gone in 3 years and 10 months. Sure, but we don't know who Trump tours. We don't know if he doesn't do 3 terms. Does he ban election? Who knows?
Can we just pause there and dissect how much damage can be done in 3 years and 10 months?
Because we're not even 2 months in yet.
We're not even 2 months. Exactly.
So I do agree with you. There is a humongous realignment happening in global geopolitics. And I think, yes, America is important, but there's now going, if it does go where there's like America and then there's like Europe and then there's like BRICS and all of that, America might not be the right one to be aligned with anymore, but it's going to be messy, noisy, and painful as that transition happens.
This is going to have to be a conversation for many, many other days because we have so many factors to look at when we look at this. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Shout out to our TikTok community. As always, we love you guys. You guys keep us going. We are growing on YouTube as well. Shout out to that community. Just in general, hey, Insider Exchange, you guys are fire, hey. Before we wrap things up, we're looking at the effect of tax bracket creep in our deep dive. You want to look at that. It is coming off the back of the latest sentiments or the latest budget speech that was proposed that said that there would be no inflationary adjustment to the tax brackets. At the same time, the finance minister said that there would be no impact for personal taxpayers, and that is kind of not true. So that's our deep dive. Tune in for that. It will be out if you are going to be looking out for that episode. It will be out later in the week. Until next time, Market Matters, that's it. In our deep dive this week, we take a look at bracket creep or tax drag. It's got many, many names, but it effectively means you earn less. Right? Shocking. Can't believe it.
Pay more tax.
Pay more tax. So the budget speech finally took place this last Wednesday. And in the budget speech, there was a very interesting statement made by the Minister of Finance, Enoch Godongwana, saying that there will be no adjustments mm-hmm. to the tax brackets, mm-hmm. but at the same time saying we are not imposing any addition. Actually, no. Let me find you the exact wording for that. I have a copy of the exact words that were said by the finance minister, because I, for one, don't like misquoting people. I think that's just unfair. In the 2025 budget speech, the minister says, and I quote, "Government also proposes no inflationary adjustments to personal income tax brackets, rebates, and medical tax credits." Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Now, the minister also then goes on to say, and I quote, once again, "We are aware of the fact that a lower overall burden of tax can help to increase investment and job creation and also unlock household spending power." Now, for a minister to imply a lower tax burden as a result of not increasing the tax brackets is a very interesting conversation. And this is the deep dive that we're getting into. This is the tax drag, or what we know as bracket creep. Effectively, in simple terms, it is when the tax brackets do not keep up with inflation.
Yeah.
Inflation happens every year.
Yeah.
It increases. Whether we like it or not, it is there. And for some people, alongside inflation, you might get a salary increase. For some people, you don't get a salary increase. Mm-hmm. And we'll get to the salary increase second portion of it in a moment. But effectively, when your tax bracket does not keep up, even if you earn the same amount of money, you effectively earn less, because you effectively pay more tax, whether you like it or yeah. not. And we'll give you a simple example. So we'll take the example where someone does happen to earn an increase, and we'll take an example where someone perhaps does not earn an increase, right? Let's start with the example where someone does earn an increase. Let's say you earn 360,000 Rand per annum. Round figure, cool, great.
30K a month.
30,000 a month. You are probably going to pay around 57,000, just under 58,000 in taxes, right? When you've paid that, your effective tax rate sits at around 16%, so 15.9 odd percent, right? Assume you get a 5% increase for the next year and a 5% increase for the year after that. The first 5% increase takes your salary up to 378,000, and the tax you would then pay on that without the brackets adjusting is now 62,000 instead of, say, 57,000. So instead of 57.5, you're at 62.5. Effectively, you're paying an additional, so your new tax effect, your new effective tax rate rather, is 16.55%. So now you've gone up in terms of the effective yeah. amount of tax you've paid just for earning that increase, because the tax brackets weren't adjusted. I'll leave it there. You get the idea.
You have less money in your pocket and there's more money at SARS.
There we go. Whether you are paying more money or not, there now here's the other caveat to that. What happens when your salary increase throws you into an entirely different tax bracket?
So, I mean, and here we're not even talking about that. So it depends. I mean, it's the way it works, right? So the way the tax works is, and I haven't got the exact numbers here, but let's say it's up to 270,000. So you pay X amount rand value up to 270, and then a percentage above,
mm-hmm.
anything above that. And mm-hmm. then you hit the next bracket, and then you pay that base and a percentage above.
Absolutely.
So if it pushes you into into a bracket. It's not that your entire tax suddenly goes up, but all that new money does go up. So if that pushes you through a bracket, let's say you got a promotion and from 360 you went to, I don't know, 420, you got a big increase because of the promotion, well then, sorry for you, you're just going to pay a lot more tax
Of it. You could effectively end up not enjoying any of your bonus because you could effectively end up paying more tax. So let's say you were
Wouldn't take it all. I mean,
it would take most of it such that it doesn't make sense, because if you're at the ceiling of one bracket, to then move up into a bracket and be at the base of that other bracket, you're effectively, one, paying more in the residual side of it, but sometimes on the first portion of the tax as well, that goes up as well. So you could find yourself earning pretty much the same that you were earning prior to the increase, and then does that make it worth it?
Sure, but it's not going to. Our highest tax bracket is 45, so you're never going to. You're never going to get less than half of what your increase is.
Fair.
I mean, does it make it worth it? I mean, I don't know. I mean, we were talking earlier about how much money do you need. I think for the average person watching this show, more money is good. We knew some shabalala, less so. But for you and I,
for the average South African out there,
and it is. I mean, so it you know, you're effectively paying 26, 31, 36, 39, 41, or 40. You were paying 41, it pushes into new bracket, you're only paying 45, it's not the end. It's a big number.
Okay, so I've got the brackets, right?
Yeah.
So let's go with that 360 example once again. From the 360 example, you would have been paying 26% on anything above the 237,000 rand that you would have been earning. This is according to SARS, by the way. We're not making up these numbers. This is on the SARS official website. If you then get bumped up to 378, you effectively are now in a new tax bracket where you are no longer being taxed 26% of income above 237,000. You are now being taxed 31% of income above 370,000. Now, granted, your income above 370,000 might not be that much. It might be that 8,000 excess there. But your base tax, being the amount prior to that, was 42,678 at that first bracket, is now 77,362. Right? So that is call it a 35,000 rand difference in tax, right? Over 3,000 rand more tax per month over 12 months, effectively, is what you are then paying just on the basis that you've been moved into a new tax bracket. So yes, you will see 18,000 rand more in salary. You will pay 3,000 rand more in tax on that. You will also then pay 31%, so an additional 5% on the excess between the 378 and the 370, so the additional 8,000. So yes, you do still earn the money, but if we simply adjusted for the tax brackets to avoid bracket creep and said we're adjusting the tax brackets by inflation, then your 5% salary increase, if an inflation adjusted increase is a 5% increase, leaves you in the same bracket.
In the same place. And if we go back to what we were doing in the aughts, where they, what he did was he actually adjusted them more than inflation. So you paid less tax money into people's pockets. It's a very sneaky way of taking money out of people's pockets.
Yes, because this particular adjustment or non-adjustment will cost South African taxpayers around 18 billion rand in revenues that the SARS will now, well, the receiver of revenue will now get, right? Now, SARS is going to collect tax no matter what. That's their job. Sure. That's why they exist as an organization. But for the government to say, we are not going to impact your personal tax lives, and then to do exactly that, kind of seems unfair.
Yeah, 100%, and misleading.
And this is the second year in a row they've done it.
Yeah, yeah.
They did it last year budget as well.
Yeah. And sometimes what they do is inflation's, you know, 3%, so they only change it by 1. So they a bitty creep. But the last 2 years has been, and to be clear, this year inflation is low. Last year, inflation not so low.
Exactly. And so
and I doubt we also, the years when our inflation was up at the sevens, I doubt we got 7% bracket changes.
No, we didn't.
We're being squeezed.
So we'd always been squeezed for the longest time. And that then begs the question around when we look at this bracket creep, you can't get around it, can you?
No.
There's no way to get around it. There's no way to say to an employer, hey, employer, I kind of don't want more money. Everybody needs more money. We need more bills to pay. So I will take the adjusted increase.
Because there's no way, because any way that they give you money is then perks and you get taxed on it.
You get taxed on that anyway.
They give you a car. You get They give you a car,
allowances,
you get taxed,
all
allowances. All they can do is make the quality of snacks at the office better.
Ooh.
Upgrade the snacks.
Get Woolly snacks in the office.
Yeah, Woolly. No pick and pay snacks. Woolly snacks. Chuckles.
Chuckles. I don't know, right? That would, I suppose,
gotta,
that would make
a lot
people,
of chuckles you got to eat.
It's a lot of chuckles you got to eat to make up for the salary increase that you declined because it would cost you more in tax. But South Africans, by and large, don't have the luxury of a choice. We don't have the luxury of sitting back and saying, I will forego this tax increase. We all look forward to bonus season. For those that still get bonuses, Si and I don't get bonuses. We pay ourselves a bonus. And for now, it's going to fit inside this cup. See, there we go. There's the bonus for the last year. But yeah, for those that are formally and properly employed, you can't get away from this. No. And you have to sort of kind of stomach it and live with it.
And that's why it's such a evil and ingenious plan by finance ministers the world over. It's like that the Bad Oak in the Bond movies. That.
Every Bond villain in every Bond movie. You know, there's 50 movies, right?
Yeah, yeah. But they start life as a finance minister and then they become an evil villain in the Bond movie.
Okay, there we go. If you're looking for a career path switch in your life, consider being a Bond villain. Apparently, it pays really well.
Sure.
Or be a CEO of a bank, depending on which bank that is. But yeah, from a bracket creep perspective, I mean, it's very difficult to sit back and say that this is not something that bothers South Africans. I think it's something that's not discussed and not spoken about because you kind of, because the number's not there, you almost think it doesn't happen. You almost put it out of your mind. Because the numbers are not physically written down, you almost are like, oh no, but, you know, you forget. Or maybe that's the plan, is to make South Africans forget that this has got an impact on your life. But it does. It has a material and financial impact.
Yeah. No, it absolutely does. It hurts is the short answer. Mm. And it comes back to the whole budget, which was the budget take one, which never happened. And then we've all read the speech and seen the documents, and the thought around it was we're in a crisis and this budget is just plodding along. And frankly, take two was no better.
Take two was no better.
Sure.
Because we didn't alleviate the crisis.
No.
We just deferred some of the crisis pain to another point in time.
Yeah.
And we basically just still said to the South African out there, it is still your problem to carry excessive government expenditure on your shoulders.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, we apologize, South Africans, for the bracket creep, for the tax drag that has been imposed on you and on all of us by the government of South Africa. Unfortunately, there's nothing you and I can do about it at this point in time, at least for the next year, that is going to be in effect. And if next year we do get an inflationary adjusted increase to the tax brackets, I can guarantee you it won't be backdated to include the last 2 years. We're going to leave the deep dive on that note. We're going to get straight into our investor insights, and we're going to be taking a look at some surprises in investor insights. We're going to be looking at new record highs on some markets, and we're going to look at companies that are finally doing what they said they would do. Stick around for Investor Insights. Sly knows exactly what I'm talking about with that. Until next time, that's the deep dive. And we wrap things up with Investor Insights this week. We are taking a look at the gold price reaching all-time highs, clocking above $3,000 a fine ounce. We're taking a look at the favor that is being found once again in European stocks. We've had this on our show as well. We're taking a look at Renogen. They've come out of the woodworks to give us some good news as well. So we have quite a few things to dig into, but I suppose let's perhaps start with EU Telsat.
Yeah, so I was listening to a podcast, and I mean, we appreciate the meltdown at Tesla, which is, well, no, look.
Gotta love a good meltdown.
In part, the meltdown is because.
Self-imposed, say it.
Yeah, but no, look, some of it is they haven't had a refresh in a long, long time. And there is apparently, I think, the Model Y or one of them is getting a refresh this year. If you speak to car nerds, I'm not one, they'll tell you that thing just looks old. Okay, fair enough. So what you need then is that. But the next one is self-imposed. I mean, you know, it was, what was it, 7 years ago, Tesla was the top LGBTQI stock to work for in America or California or something, because that was your demographic. Mm. Unfortunately, when you pivot your demographic to Nazis, there's just not many of them. So sales in Germany are down 74%. Sales in France are down 60%. I mean, it turns out there's more Nazis than you thought, but nonetheless. So there's an absolute collapse there. Now, that's Tesla, and they did an infomercial at the White House, which was quite cringy.
Oh, and a red Tesla. I saw that. Yeah.
It was quite ugly. But anyway, be that as it may. but now we're starting to see. So that's directly Elon and Tesla and Doge and Trump and his going into politics. And speak to any CEO anywhere in the world and they will tell you, keep your politics out of business. Because you're going to upset half your customers. Don't do it. Anyway. But then I started to think to myself, but what about the Starlink fallout? Now, not so much sending rockets, because there's not many who can do it. In fact, it's only them. And well, NASA tries, Boeing tries, Blue Origin.
No one else is really interested in living on Mars at this point.
Just general rockets into space. There's not much else happening there. But the Starlink is the biggie. So I went looking for other alternatives, and there are alternatives, and they are They are sort of snapping at heels. I mean, we've had one of the government departments in Canada cancel a Starlink. Now they're going to want options. There is Blue Origin has one, but it's very small. What you find is that they're mostly more regional, whereas Starlink really is pretty much the planet.
You say Canada canceling Starlink, and again, this speaks to the self-imposed side of it, right? There was a very interesting tweet or post on X, right, on the platform owned by the owner of Starlink and Tesla and X. Right. On the platform, conspiracy theorists puts out a statement saying that one of the businessmen invested in the New York Times, one of the Mexican businessmen invested in the New York Times, worth around $70 billion.
Carlos Slim.
I think so.
Carlos Slim.
That gentleman is apparently linked to Mexican drug cartels. So someone puts this up on X. Following that, the owner of X retweets this post. And Carlos decides, you know what? I'm going to approach this from a diplomatic Cyril Ramaphosa perspective and cancels $20 billion worth of Starlink contracts because you implied that I'm... may or may not be linked to this. And as you said, what's business and politics keep those things far apart. Now, whether or not Carlos Slim is involved in the Mexican drug cartels, we don't know. We don't live in Mexico. But for you to imply that what anyone says is just the truth because you are now in the position that you're in. And I think this is something that Elon needs to be aware of.
Power comes responsibility.
Yes. With Uncle Ben said it best, with great power comes great responsibility.
And it's responsibility because he wears so many hats. Yes. Some of those responsibilities are to shareholders of Tesla and
to shareholders
SpaceX
of X.
And et cetera, et cetera.
We forget that from an X perspective, you didn't actually buy X. You put up collateral in the form of your Tesla shares. And if your Tesla shares start to tank and Tesla's, by the way, interestingly enough, between the Trump inauguration and now, Tesla shares are down more than 40%. So if you start to get margin called on your Tesla stock, what happens to your ownership of the X platform? Now, obviously, we might be quite a way away from that, a couple of billion away from that. But for you to break the Guinness World Record of the most amount of net worth lost by a single individual in a lifetime at $120 billion clearly means you've upset some people at some point or another. And you should also take that into account as a business person, never mind from a political point of view. Unless you've got aspirations of one day being the president of the United States, then I suppose each to their own.
So then I went and I dug around this EU Telsat.
We digress.
Sorry, we digress. But I dig around this EU Telsat. I just can't get excited about it. Firstly, I go and look at analyst expectations. Now, analyst consensus, right? You know what these are always like. Everyone's like, buy, strong buy. There might be some hold. This has two sells and four holds. I've never seen that before.
There's no buy at all.
There's no buys. There's no strong buys. They don't seem to be making any money. They make a little bit of money, but not a lot. Revenues only... So for the current last 12 months, revenue is 1.2 billion euros, market cap's 2.8 billion. I thought I had sold a really like exciting little business, and I dug around and I'm like,
not so much. Which is interesting because
it trades at a discount to price to book, and maybe it's because everyone looked at it and said, "Guys, you can't beat Starlink."
Yes, and now everybody's saying we need an alternative.
Because to be clear, when you look at the price graph, I mean, it's 1 month move is 325%. Year to date, it's up 160.
Interestingly enough, when I look at the wall that we had Tesla already in an alternative space, because we had said we like alternatives like BYD and all of that. And I'm thinking for our international wall at this point, we perhaps then add EU Telsat as something we could potentially like. Mm-hmm. And we also then add Starlink as an alternative or as an avoid, because I don't want to be exposed to a business. Oh, well, to be fair, Starlink is privately traded at the moment. So it wouldn't make a difference.
The Scottish, what's that weird Scottish company? Scottish lending or something, and you think they're going to be Scottish mortgage or something, and they own shares in it in
Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust.
Yeah, so they have some SpaceX. I think last time
they
checked.
They have 7.1% of Space Exploration Technologies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So there is some. I must say, the first time I did an interview about Scottish Mortgage, of course, you open the interview and you're like, so this is like they, oh no, they don't do mortgages at all.
It's just the name. We just couldn't name it anything else.
Yeah, yeah. So there are some listed and unlisted who have exposure, but it's not, you know, it's going to be what's it? It's less than 5% of their portfolio as of the date, which I can't find.
So they also hold 2.7% of ByteDance and 2.7% of Red Ferraris.
What are red Ferraris?
No, just normal Ferraris. Okay. It's just the pictures in red. I know you're upset about colors.
No,
Ferraris.
I was quite excited. I thought I could buy it.
Just the red ones, not the yellow ones. No, sir, you have to buy the whole company. So, they hold about 7% of SpaceX. Yeah. Is EU Telsat tradable at the moment?
It's got liquidity. It trades in Paris, trades in the US. It's around, it's out there.
Okay.
Code is ETLE. ETL.
ETL. If you guys are looking for an alternative to Starlink, which isn't really listed, perhaps that's something worth considering. I want to get into the gold price in a second, and perhaps we should do Renogen first. Renogen has been on the receiving end of some very colorful comments by a gentleman named Albi Solaris on X. And with reason, of course. I mean, having gone through the numbers he's gone through, he's seen that the business comes from a not so viable position and didn't believe in the vision or the story that the CEO, Stefano Morani, was selling. And this has been very publicly made aware or made public knowledge. And they finally started producing liquid helium.
Yeah. And I just want to say, I mean, Albi's great and he does good stuff. But the way he was trying to dissect and trash this story was just bogus. I mean, he's like, oh, but the DWARs are only like, you know, 31 kilos of helium and they're promising 75. It's like, dude, you're reading what's not here anyway. Park that aside. Like helium, like how many years late? So I had Kier Nyama on this morning on my other show, and he said, he reminded us that in 2016, they signed a deal with Afrox to provide helium in 2018.
So we are almost 10 years late.
Yeah, we are very late.
Part of 5 years,
phase two, when I was at the plant, just a disclaimer, I own some shares and I've been to Virginia. When one of my trips to Virginia, phase two was set for completion in 2026. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yo, look, it is hard doing that sort of thing. Make no mistake about it. Mm-hmm. It is hard. They are very late. They still can't. They can't directly fill the main storage container. Mm-hmm. They've got to do little ones. That is far from ideal. They still have serious technical challenges.
Yeah.
And I think that might be linked to their cold box issues that they've had in time. This should have been producing, even just at delayed things, it should have been there towards the end of 23. Mm. Instead, here we are in 2025. That said, it's a big deal for Renogen. It's a big deal for Stefano. It's a big deal for South Africa. Let's be clear about that.
Do we like them enough to have them on our wall? I know, as you said, both from a disclaimer point of view, both Sai and I have bought some Renogen shares. We've both commented on this in the past. Yeah. We've all been frustrated by the lack of helium production. No one's disputing that. Do we like them enough for them to get a spot on our wall just yet? Or do we want them to fix the cold box stuff to fix everything else? And then we'll like them. The share price has taken the biggest knock. At some point, it was holding steady, probably around the 10, 11 Rand mark. I think when I last looked at it, we were closer to 3 Rand.
It got to 3. It's now 8.28.
Oh, we're back at 8. Okay. So do we like it enough at 8 to add it to the wall, taking into account all of the challenges they've been through and the fact that they still need to raise a lot of capital and that US listing is not happening anytime soon?
No.
No. There we go. That's the honest truth.
I love it. For now, I hold it, but
for now, it doesn't make the wall of our preferred picks. It's going to go on our avoid section. Maybe they can claw their way out of that. Maybe we'll see improvements from their perspective there. What is also on our wall that we've recently added is Euro Stoxx 50. That is, we put it in easy money. I think we put it in like it. We really do like it. We don't think it's yet blue chip, but it is definitely something that we really, really like at the moment. Let's go to the gold price, because that's just $3,000 an ounce. We spoke about this. We had Moshima on the show. I don't even remember when we said it was going to happen. I didn't think it was going to happen last week, but it did.
Yeah, suddenly it was Friday morning. Every morning I wake up bright and early. I go have my coffee and smoke in the balcony, and I check how the US did, how the Rand and how gold. Mm. And the US had collapsed on Thursday night. That was fine. No,
you were happy with that.
The Rand was doing what it does at the moment, which is nothing, which is weird. And gold was at 299,980. And I'm like, guys, I got a show in 2 hours. I need you to get above 3,000 because I have a headline.
I have a headline.
Man, I hadn't finished my coffee. There it was, 3,010.
There's your headline. No, I mean, again, a lot of this I don't think has to do with anything other than the risk sentiment that the White House is putting out into global markets, number one. And number two, if you look at the valuations, right? Mm. I saw something interesting where someone said that all of the gold that has been mined in the world equates to around $17 trillion in terms of value at current prices. At the same time, the top 10 companies in the United States equate to about $16 trillion in value. Gold is an actual tradable commodity with a use case. And we're talking all the gold that's been mined, that's also been put into jewelry, that's also been traded, that's sitting in vaults and all of that from central banks. All of the gold that has been mined on the planet up to now is worth a little more than the top 10 US companies. And someone then poses the question, but then should we not be revaluing and re-rating gold to its actual worth? How is it that companies that have effectively an artificial valuation, because that is what it is, the numeric value assigned to it based on whether we agree with your financial projections or not, how is that equating to something that has physical value to it that we've been able to articulate?
So the short answer is, at $3,000, gold is cheap.
There we go. At $3,000, gold is cheap. What the? Do you know what? I think I want to get an estimate on where a fair value should be for that commodity.
Yeah, so they do weird stuff. Like you could buy a suit for half a gold coin in Paris in 1422. And you can still buy a suit for half a gold coin in Paris in 1422. But I think that there's, and I appreciate that during that time there's been heads chopped off and wars and Olympic opening ceremonies and all of that sort of stuff. But I got to say, I think that, and I was anti-gold up until sort of pandemic 21. Mm. I'm very late to the gold boom. Mm. But I don't know that that's a fair way to reflect it. We've got central banks buying again. The US dollar's been weaponized. We've still got people out there. When I did my show, the number of folks who message me and says it's too late to buy gold. And I'm like, you don't have gold? They're like, I don't have gold. Mm. I'm like, I don't know if it's too late, but like, I mean, my last buy was 28.65 or so, admittedly in my wife's name. my wife's last buy, and I manage her account. Mm. But I was quite happy to pay 28 something. Mm. I mean, you know, gold 4,000. I mean, I thought 2,000 was a crazy number.
Right. And that was the thing. I mean, when we looked at the gold price in the pandemic at 1650, we had never hit 2,000 an ounce. Mm-hmm. We smashed through 2,000, didn't think about it twice, went straight to 2,500, and then we're just like, okay, now we'll rethink this 2,000 level kind of thing, you know? And even now at 3,000, we tapped 3,000 very briefly. We've seen some retracement. We might come back down.
It's 2,986 at this point.
Yeah, so we might come back down. But the point around the gold price is, if markets are going to be even more uncertain going into the future, then
And if we've got this geopolitical realignment that is happening
over the next 4 years, potentially,
and maybe potentially longer, maybe shorter, who knows? But if that is playing out, I mean, I think gold can weaken down to 2,800. That certainly is an easy enough place. If you didn't buy above 3,000, you can now buy for 2,986. But I think there's still legs in gold.
For those that are looking to see what a gold chart looks like, I'll give you a free crash course on that. It's Sy's favorite chart, bottom left, top right. That's where we're going to leave the show. That's exactly the note we're going to leave the show on. Thanks, folks, for tuning in. If you've missed the conversations, you know exactly where to catch up on them. Before we leave, we don't leave you without an unfiltered opinion. This week's one, particularly interesting. Sy, what is it?
Oh, so you know when you drive to Durban, I don't know about other roads, they've got those timed cameras where they do average speed prosecution.
Yes.
Which is when you drive a roadster, coupe.
Horrible things in life.
You need to be a smoker. So as you're coming along and you see the camera, because you see it a little way, pull over, have a little cigarette, walk around the car. It's good for your legs. It's bad for your lungs. It's great for your banking.
It's good for your legs. It's bad for your lungs. And it's great for your bank account. We'll leave the conversation there. Until next time, investing isn't hard. Just try it.